Hi, I'm Francis Hellier, and welcome to my brand new podcast, Metaverse. This is a podcast for the future-minded, a series for anyone on the hunt for the next big thing and all its possibilities and implications. This is Tomorrow's World Today. With each episode, I will chat to those at the top of their fields, from futurists in crypto and space travel to forecasters in business and tech. Together, we will ask the question, what's next? Today, I'm joined by Madeline Ashby, futurist, science fiction writer, speaker, and teacher. Madeline is best known for a successful series of science fiction novels, which include the bestseller Company Town and the Machine Dynasty series. Beside her sci-fi books, she's also written many short stories, and in 2020, co-authored her first non-fiction book, How to Future. Having settled in Canada, Madeline was until recently a regular columnist for the Ottawa Citizen, and has worked in futurism for the World Health Organization, the Ontario government, and Intel Labs. Madeline, it's great to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Especially after that introduction. Thanks.
You're very welcome.
My mom will be so pleased.
My mom's always proud of me too. So anything I do like this, she's always very proud. So it's good we have good mums. Let's start with an important question. What does futurism mean to you?
Well, aside from a fascist adjacent design movement from Italy, you know, it's the, I've heard it called foresight, strategic foresight, futurology. Someone asked me if I was a futurologist once, and I said, no, I don't do operations. But the foresight, which is the discipline that I have a degree in, like I have a master's in design of all things, in strategic foresight and innovation, despite my total inability to draw a straight line. So foresight is how I tend to think of it, about it, but futurist is sort of what people come to me for, I guess, like explaining what foresight is and then explaining the difference between that and some other term can get very arcane and esoteric and kind of academic and stuff. But basically what it means is that I help people have conversations about the future.
What does the future mean to you in that sense then as well? So it's there's one thing to talk about futurism, the prediction of the future. What does future mean to you?
Well, I tend to avoid having a conversation about any one particular future or any future as a singular entity. And I think most people in my line of work would agree with me there that basically what we try to do is talk about the many possible futures for any one individual, organization, government, state, context, milieu, industry, what have you, has many possible futures sort of unfolding in possibility at any one time. And often, you know, when we talk about foresight or developing scenarios in a foresight context, so when we imagine multiple possibilities and sort of the worlds in which those possibilities unfold, it's better, at least for me, to imagine those things as sort of stacked on top of each other. They're sort of all the possible scenarios that one might sort of live their way into are unfolding for different people at the same time. So like the collapse scenario is happening for some people in some places, the growth scenario is happening for other people in other places. And that's just, they're all sort of unfolding together. It's not necessarily that one or the other happens or is right, or, you know, that the prediction was accurate, because we also just try to avoid using the language of prediction in general. And so it's a really interesting question to me, because to me, what's most important is what does the future mean to the person I'm talking to? Like, it's almost more important that I know what the future means to them, because then I can sort of say, okay, well, now I know that. So let's talk about X, Y, and Z.
And what was it that sort of inspired you to get into this space? I mean, what was it about futurism that attracted you?
Well, honestly, it was a friend of mine, Carl Schrader, who's also a science fiction writer and also a futurist. Carl and I went through the same academic program together at OCADU here in Toronto. And Carl had already done a lot of work for the Canadian Armed Forces and other clients, as well as being a novelist. And I was wrapping up my first master's, and I was kind of in that loose ends place of, you know, not knowing what to do next. And he said, so after you graduate, what's after that? And I said, you know, honestly, I don't know. And he said, well, I think you need to do what I do. You need to be a novelist and you need to be a consultant. Like, traditional academia is not for you. You need, like, and traditional work is not free. You need to be free. And he said, I'm applying to this program. You should apply for it too and see where it takes you. And the rest is history. Like, it was, you know, when he said that, I thought, you know what? He's right. I think I looked at the sort of the work he was doing and the life that he had and the way that he balanced those things and thought, yeah, this is right. And when I approached my academic advisors on the program that I was just wrapping up, I showed them what this program was, and they said, oh yeah, that's absolutely for you. and so it was like I got confirmation like right away. and people thought, really lucky. I was really lucky that I had friends who cared about me enough to sort of say, this slightly weird thing seems like it's for you.
So tell me about the work you did for the Ontario government. I mean, what were you doing for them?
Oh, well, that was that project I wrapped years and years ago. So it's I was working on a 11 years ago. I was working on a project for the Ontario government called 2020 Media Futures. And that was the first big foresight project I did out of the Strategic Innovation Lab, or the S Lab, over at OCAD University. It was right when OCAD was getting accredited. So as a university, it had been accredited in Canada as a college, but now it's OCAD University, which has to do with, again, kind of arcane esoteric academia stuff. And so we were working on, what is the future of Canadian media? And what does it mean when you're a geographically large country and a population-wise small country? What does it mean to produce your own content? What are the issues of national identity there? What are the issues of heritage there? How can the mission of multiculturalism within Canada expand? What does it mean to be pluralistic in that context? What does it mean to, you know, how is technology impacting those things, from the internet to also copyright changes to all kinds of stuff? And so I helped facilitate workshops. I did research. I conducted interviews. We did Delphi stuff. We did scenario development. We did all kinds of stuff. And then I worked after that with the same lab on a project called Economic Futures for Ontario. And that's the province that I live in. And so we were, you know, at the easels with the sticky notes, you know, asking how might we, you know, all the fun stuff.
And you also worked for Intel. Yes. And perhaps you can explain a bit about the work you did for Intel.
So right when I was wrapping up my second master's thesis, when I was working at the S Lab and getting my master's degree wrapped up, I was working on a foresight thesis or a design thesis on the future of border security. And that, due to sort of personal circumstances, I was looking around for yet another job. And I told a friend that I was working on this. And I said, would you be interested in publishing some of this? And he said, oh, our publishing remit is full this year. You should talk to my friend, Brian David Johnson, over at Intel. And he introduced us, and I met Brian, and Brian is a great guy. Anyone who's ever met him is, you know, he's just got a ton of energy. He loves to get stuff done. He loves to talking about the future. And we just, you know, got along great. And he had me out to Portland and sort of had some interesting conversations about some things that they were working on. And they said, hey, based on your research, would you like to work up some scenarios for us? And based on some of the research that we're doing and based on some of the research that you're doing, can we like find a way to sort of blend these two together? And can you write some scenarios that are just for us? And I said, sure. And so I spent the next few months like banging out a bunch of different scenarios on some of the research that they had done and some of the technologies that they had in development. And that's by and large what I do now. Like, that sort of set the tone for the rest of my career, in that people come to me either with technologies that they have in development or research that they've already done, sort of things that they're curious about or something, or sort of insights that they've yielded in other workshops or ideations that they've done or something like that. And they say, hey, can you sort of interpret this in fiction in a way that, you know, is going to go over differently than a series of pie charts or, you know, a series of, of 2x2 matrices within the foresight context. Like, we can look at a 2x2 matrix, we can look at, you know, near, mid, and far term futures, we could look at sort of the classic Jim Dator images of the future, things like that, or we could set a story in one of these worlds or more of these worlds and ask what that looks like. And so basically what I spend my time doing is adding a human context to various possible visions of the future. I liken it a lot to adding human figures to concept art or to scale models. You can look at a scale model a lot. Like, you can have a beautiful scale model of a future building or a future city or what have you. But until you actually have those little human figures in the model, you won't really know how it scales up. You won't really know how humans are going to interact with it. And that's mostly what I do.
So when we look at your exploration of humanity and look at humans within the context of the bigger picture, we've all gone through the most incredible period where, with a pandemic, every single person on Earth has been affected by the same thing, which is probably the only time in human history we can remember, because even if you look at the Second World War, it didn't necessarily affect every person on Earth. The pandemic has affected every single person through every walk of life. How much of an effect will the pandemic have on how things will change going forward, how we react both in terms of the environment, how we react individually and for business and tech? How many changes are going to come born as a consequence of the pandemic?
I have no idea on the exact number, but I think we're seeing those changes already, right? And I think that there are sort of immediate effects and then midterm effects and then sort of far-term effects. And like, the far-term effects are sort of the effects that are born out of children who will be experienced and born out by children who are kids now. Like the children of the pandemic, children who were either born during it or who were sort of at home being schooled or being put through the rigmarole or through the ringer of sort of being put in school and then taken out and put in school and then taken out and so on, or changing their entire academic track generally. The pandemic in general, I think, has sped up a lot of trends. There were already supply chain issues. Now they're faster. There were already massive inequalities at the level of the supply chain workers, at the level of healthcare workers, at the level of frontline employees. Those have accelerated. There was already a massive, massive trend toward work from home and requests to work from home and requests to be able to have flex hours and to have more remote work. Those are things that parents, that disabled people, that lots of groups had been asking for decades. Since the inception of the internet, everybody realized, like, oh wait, there's a lot of this that I could do from home. But it took the pandemic to speed that up. So when we talk about sort of trends in the futures context, we can also talk about when they accelerate. And at inflection points like this, they accelerate. You know, in the same way that, you know, even your interpersonal behaviors will accelerate. You know, if you were in a relationship, you're either out of it now or you're probably married. If you were at loose ends with certain friends or you were at loose ends with an organization, you're either deeply committed to it now or it's gone entirely. It really emphasizes experiences like this, I think, like, really emphasize like an all or nothing perspective, possibly to one's detriment, but it can speed things up in a context like this. So any existing trend that was already in play, you're going to see it sort of move down the line.
Now, Madeline, you've written a number of books, fiction books, including Company Yes. Town in 2016 Yes. and the Machine Dynasty series. Now, you'd say dynasty, I'm sure.
Yeah.
In your accent, we say dynasty, the Machine Dynasty or Dynasty series.
Either way.
Can you tell us about those? And do you have a favorite book?
So, well, let me start by explaining them. So then whatever answer I give will make more sense depending on how I explain these books. The Machine Dynasty series is about self-replicating humanoid robots who eat each other, and it's the book I always talk about whenever I go through customs, because people, the customs agent will always ask, what do you do? And I say, well, I'm a science fiction writer. And they're like, really? And I say, yes, they make us in girl shapes. And like, well, what do you write about? I write about robots who eat each other. And then they just let me through. Like, oh yeah, no.
They're mildly terrified.
Yeah, there's like,
but okay. They let you through.
Yeah, I think they're often trying to figure out if I'm a journalist or something. And you know, and I'm like, no, I write about robots that eat each other. It's a series of novels in which programming and legacy code is sort of a metaphor for inherited trauma and epigenetic trauma and things like that. What it is to have less agency in the world. Company Town is about a bodyguard for the United Sex Workers of Canada, Union Local 314, on an oil rig 500 kilometers northeast of St. John's, Newfoundland. And she becomes the bodyguard for the heir apparent of a private energy firm once that firm buys the city. And then shortly after they arrive, people begin to die. So it becomes a murder mystery as well. It's a very packed book. It's really hard for me to say like which is a favorite because I feel very sentimental about both VN, which starts the Machine Dynasty series, and Company Town, in that I wouldn't have this career without VN. And Company Town also, because it was a Canada Reads finalist in 2017, it took me all over Canada. It took me to places that I would never have had sort of an opportunity on my own to go. So I visited cities that I had never been to. I met people I never would have met. I got to do a lot of library events. I got to meet reading, like, you know, book clubs and reading groups and students. And I got to drive across Newfoundland in a roadie van with CBC and stuff. Like, there's just experiences that I never would have had without it. And the Canada Read cycle was like very intense, but I wouldn't trade it. I mean, it was just a fascinating journey to be on. It's a fascinating journey to be on when your book is the subject of reality television. I suppose it is
like choosing between your favorite children, really. Isn't
it?
You can't choose a favorite.
And I have a lot of affection for How to Future as well, because Scott and I have worked together in a contract capacity for a really, really long time. And he's one of my favorite people. And anytime you can work with, we're sort of like, I don't know, we're like John Ford and John Wayne at this point. We're like, you know, for me, I think I will take any opportunity to go out and work with him on location or wherever. So
for our listeners, I mean, your book, the full title is How to Future, Leading and Sense Making in an Age of Hyper Change.
Yes.
Which you obviously wrote with Scott Smith, and that explores different possible landscapes of the future. So what was the thinking behind this? How did you get to work with Scott? And you know, tell me a little bit about the story behind that book.
Well, I met Scott in probably 2009. When he was a guest lecturer at OCAD while I was working on my Foresight degree. You know, I think we kind of hit it off right away, and then we met each other again a year later, and we just sort of followed each other's work and so on. And we would frequently have, like, you know, Saturday morning Twitter conversations about, you know, about everything from Hammer films to the soccer match to whatever. And we sort of followed each other's work, and we took a lot of the same attitude on things, I think. We would disagree, but our values would be the same, I would say. You know, we had known each other for a long time, and then in 2015 or 2016, he and his partner, Susan Cocksmith, came to me and said, "Hey, do you want to work with us on some stuff? What are you doing next year?" And I said, "I don't know, you tell me." And so we started working together on a contract basis on a bunch of different projects. And we went out, you know, we've been to London, we've been to Dubai, we've been to, you know, the Netherlands, we've kind of gone everywhere. And wherever we went, people would ask the same question, which was, what is the book to get started with here? And there are a lot of Foresight books. Like, you can, you know, you can find them, you can go to your library, you can go to your bookstore, you can go to Amazon, you can, you know, there are a huge number of Foresight books out there, but they are primarily written for other Foresighters and other futurists. So they're very in industry, and they have a real kind of like industry lexicon, and there's a lot of jargon, and they are written at a really specific, to a really specific audience, many of whom are like in the MBA kind of track, or they're on a business track, or they're in like an innovation context, or they're just other foresighters. And so it's kind of limited. And what, you know, we were approached, I was approached to do a book, and we were approached to do a book, and and Susan and Scott like worked up, we all worked up this great proposal, took it around. What we wanted to do was write a book about foresight and futures thinking, and what Scott calls the centric stance, kind of that interior nimbleness to imagine many possible futures at once and just hold them all in your mind at the same time. We wanted to write a book that could be taken from the basement of a community center right up to the C-suite. Like, we wanted a book that would go to all levels of the building, basically. That we wanted a book that if you read it in an afternoon, you would feel more prepared than you had before to talk about the future of anything, to talk about futures plural, for your organization, for yourself, for your company, for your community, for whomever. And I think we did that. I think like that's one of the things that people have really sort of gotten back to us about, is that the book is not cloaked in a lot of specialist language. It's a really good opportunity to sort of, if you read this, it's a great way to find out if futures work is for you, I think. Like, if you get excited about what's in here, you will know, like, oh, okay, I should definitely read more. I should engage more with this. I should start following these people. I should start reading these publications, what have you. If you read through this and say, oh my God, that sounds really, that sounds like a lot. I don't know if it's for me. Then we've saved you, you know, thousands of dollars in graduate education. So...
Good plan.
So we're happy to do that too.
So one of your more recent projects, aside all the wonderful books you've been writing, is for the WHO, the World Health Organization.
Yeah.
And I think that related to COVID-19,
yes.
Which sounds fascinating. Tell me a little bit about that.
I was approached either March or April, possibly even earlier, but that whole time right at the beginning of the pandemic is kind of a blur, and I imagine it's a blur for everybody, so forgive me if I don't have the exact date to hand, but it was in the spring. I remember because I have a birthday in April, and I remember I was working furiously on my birthday. I was approached by a colleague that I had met, Jess Bland, at the School of International Futures, and they were doing some work. And she said, hey, we need somebody to come and talk with this group, this one sort of group related to an area. We need you to talk to some intra-agency or in-organization think tanks about a few different issues, and write some stories in their context specifically. So like they have to be aimed at this particular working group, at this particular, you know, for this particular geographic area. And we need you to sort of sit in on workshops and help do some research for us. And when you're done, you will have the material to write up, again, like a suite of scenarios that are narratives, and sort of make these things live for people who are literally swamped in data projections. Because I think at the beginning of the pandemic, what we had a lot of was a lot of numbers. But it was very hard to make people understand what the lived reality was going to be. You know, what does this mean for your everyday life? How many times a day are you going to be washing your hands? Are your kids going to be able to go to school? Do you need to start looking at things like in-home tutoring? How do you make sure that that person is safe? Will your condo board kick you out for not being vaccinated? Things like that. And we're still wrestling with those problems today. So I was given a very tight timeline in terms of speculation or extrapolation. And I was asked to write some stories set in the context of that geographic area, to talk about groups that were at every strata of society, and to talk about things like inequality, education, healthcare access, instability, stuff like that. And I sort of worked harder than I had in a very long time. And I think I wrote about, I think I did the total word counts, including other work that I did. And it was something like 35,000 words in a month or something like that. It was wow. Like, it was pretty solid. I was very, very lucky and very, it meant a lot to me to do, because it felt like some of the most important work I'd ever done, really. And I get emotional describing it because I got to meet with experts who were looking at the sort of long-term impacts of the virus and looking at what the lived experience of the virus would be for people. And they were talking about everything from home life to changes in, you know, healthcare outcomes 20 years from now, things like that. And I looked at things like, we were looking at things like the projection of how many children might be orphaned in a given area. And the wherewithal, the sheer bravery and wherewithal and dedication and intelligence of the people that I met just blew me away. Like, I knew a lot of, like, in my own life here at home, I knew a lot of people who were either didn't believe that it was going to be that big a deal, or they were very, very frightened. And I, because of the work that I was doing, I was able to say, like, yes, you need to be very careful. But also, I can tell you right now that everyone, you know, that the smartest people we have are throwing everything they can at this. Everyone we have is throwing everything they can at this, and there will be a solution. There will be a way out of this, but you have to be patient. And I learned that by speaking to people who had literally been evacuated from their workplaces. I spoke to people who said, we landed at 3 a.m. after they evacuated us, and I was having like an 8 a.m. call with them. I talked to people who had been hurried home, who were, you know, having to explain to their children what was going on and stuff. And there was a moment where I just said, you know, at the opening of that particular workshop day, I said, like, I just want to thank you for taking the time with me. I really appreciate it. I know that you're working incredibly hard. And it was as though, I suspect because of how early it was, there were people in that room, I suspect, who had not been told that before. And it was a huge privilege for me to be able to be the person to say thank you. And so amazing. For that alone, it was hugely meaningful to me. And some of the story elements that I wrote about did in fact turn out to come to pass in some ways, like the condo board thing. The now condo boards here in Canada, but I imagine elsewhere, are taking COVID protocols into their own hands. And that was one of the distinguishing features of one of those stories.
Amazing. And so, drawing on that experience and your writing so far and all the wonderful experiences you had up until now, what does the future hold for you, Madeline?
I know what I would like it to hold. Let's the ideal scenario, I guess. I've done a lot of work. So if anyone's listening, we're just going to put this out there in case anyone is listening.
Well, there's plenty of people listening. Don't worry.
Yeah, in case anyone is listening and think like, oh, what I would like to do. I've done a lot of work where I can kind of parachute it in. I get dropped into a lot of organizations or in a lot of contexts or workshops or what have you to sort of either interpret research from a fictional context and sort of put it into a human form and help people see problems in a human context. I get brought into workshops to sort of sprinkle future dust on them so that people can fly. I do a lot of that. I get brought in to sort of do interviews or research, but they're really short engagements. And I think now what I'd like to do is more long-term work where I see a project through from beginning to end. So a lot of really great foresight projects last longer than months. Like they can be over a year. I'd really like to sort of either be on a dedicated team for a long-term project like that, or honestly, like in that kind of context, the thing that would like meld my two careers really perfectly for me, I think, aside from like, I don't know, doing Hollywood consulting and telling people that their robots won't work in their movie, which, hey, I'm open to that. The other thing that would really work is having a residency somewhere. I would really love to be on either on a board or on a or have a residency within an organization that was like an arts residency or like a writing residency, but in a specific context. It's kind of like what Neal Stephenson did in his gaming career, honestly. And Neil is a great guy, and he has all the best ideas before everybody else has them. So I feel as though I'm in safe hands, kind of going in a similar direction. I just won't play with swords and break my finger. Neil is also, by the way, if people don't know this, Neil is actually a really great guy. Of the science fiction writers who have met my mom, he was one of the nicest to her. he met her in 2018. He was such a gentleman. And so I think, yeah, like what I would like, the trajectory, now that I've come this far and I've spent the past 10 years, over 10 years actually, freelancing and being on contract and sort of dipping in and seeing a lot of different contexts. Like I've, you know, seen a lot of different fields. I've met a lot of different people. I've gotten to know a lot of different situations. I think figuring out how to take all of that and put it into something longer term or a project that just dives deeper is what I would like to do.
Amazing. Madeline, it's been such a pleasure having you on Metaverse. I wish you all the best for all your future activities.
Thank
and I
you.
Hope to read all your books very soon. And I
hope you do too.
All our listeners to do the same. So wish you
all
the best.
Please do. Thank you.
You've been listening to Metaverse with me, Francis Hellier. Thank you to my guest, Madeline Ashby, for a great conversation. Tweet us at MetaversePod with any suggestions or feedback. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please share a link on social media. You can sign up to receive an email when a new episode drops at our website, metaverse.fm.